It's podcast time here on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network, and it is that time of year. Recording this on Monday night, June 4th. Welcome to the Sioux Cup Summer Series. It's Season 3. Brent Bloom and I'm Chris Williams, by the way. We will be tonight, today, whatever you're listening on, whichever device, put your PC, put your phone, Apple, Android, you can listen all over the web. We will be talking about our top villains in Iowa State history. We are brought to you this summer by Sioux Cup Manufacturing. And throughout the summer, I look forward to telling you about the Sioux Cup Safety Home. This is so cool, guys. 379 square feet of livable space helps people all around the world. The Sioux Cup Safety Home has a double layer roof. The ventilation keeps the home 10 degrees cooler than the exterior temperature. And the cool thing about it is the workers can construct a home in just one day with basic hand tools. Can save so many lives with this. For instance, in 2016, Category 4 Hurricane Matthew swept over Haiti. 200 safety homes were located at the time, and all of those homes survived with just minimal damage. A great Iowa company giving back to the world, Sioux Cup Manufacturing. I would encourage you all to follow them on Twitter at Sioux Cup MFG. Great stuff. We're really glad to have them on board today. Here we go. It is podcast time. The summer series continues. Let's roll. So here we are, recording Monday, June 4th, season 3. I believe this is the third season. That's what I've been promoting in Asbulum.
Correct.
The summer series. Is that correct?
But not. It's been the third in 4 years. We took a year off in there.
Oh, we did?
Yeah, we took the 16 off.
Well, why did we do that?
I don't know.
Was there like a coaching change or?
No.
Was that? Oh, that was after Cammy. That was post Cammy, and I was probably just fried.
I think that was probably it. Yeah. We expanded on some topics from season one, but I think we've got a good list for this season.
Yeah,
it's gonna be fun.
I do too. I'm actually really happy that we're starting with this one tonight, because this one tonight is polarizing. This one will get people kind of fired up.
I did some research over the weekend by revisiting some of these characters, and I was fired up. See, trying to watch things that made you mad again is actually kind of cathartic. Although it makes you doubly mad. It's like you know.
Yeah.
The ending of the movie, and yet it still is upsetting.
So what I think is interesting about tonight in this podcast is the fact that you've been an Iowa State fan for so much longer than me.
True. Albeit not as long as our older audience. I'm
correct.
Not saying that.
Yeah. Well, no, but
we're now in our mid-30s.
Yeah, but there's 50-year-olds listening to this, and we're going to miss some stuff.
Sure.
That they would have put on the list.
Correct. But I've been now a fan probably since 1990. It's basically my start. And I followed it more closely maybe at that age than even now. I mean, I was a rabid fan. Unnecessarily so.
So,
but it is who I am.
I got on the Iowa State scene.
When you went there for college.
Correct. And yeah. I've been very open about this.
Yep.
I think a lot of Iowa State fans who went to Iowa State are like this too.
Yep.
I grew up as an Iowa fan in a Hawkeye family. And I stepped onto campus in 2003. And that was over.
Quickly.
It did not. And you went to college with me.
Yep.
I was not the guy rooting for Iowa while on campus. I pulled the 180 immediately. And I always tell people you gotta hit rock bottom before you can fully see the light, right? All joking
Indeed.
Aside, since 2003, 2004 is when I began covering Iowa State.
Right.
So I get on campus, and in 2004 I took a job with CycloneNation.com, and started, and boom, was just covering the programs. So I think we come at this from very different angles.
Yep, I agree.
But I also think that's going to make it more interesting. As we get ready to knock out Iowa State's great villains, it's the Sukup Summer Series.
It was a long list, man.
So, I do you have honorable mentions?
Oh, I've got so many. I don't even know if we even want to narrow it to five. I mean, we probably have to for the sake of the conversation.
I've narrowed it. I've got my top five. But then I also have a bunch of honorable mentions.
Yeah, go ahead, and I'll let you go because there's probably everything you mentioned I will probably mention, and I might have some additionals.
Okay. The Sukup Summer Series.
Thank you to them, by the way.
Begins now.
Right now.
Great villains in Iowa State history. And I'm going to start with the softest, and then I'm going to work up to what I think is the strongest villains in Iowa State history, meaning it will spark the most emotion. My first honorable mention I have on the list is Marcus Smart.
On my list, honorable mention. Perfect illustration of Marcus Smart, the game against DeAndre Kane down there. That was the Naz Long one more bro game.
That was the three overtimes when the Clones snapped the streak.
Yep. Marcus Smart and DeAndre Kane, probably two of the front runners for Player of the Year that year. And Kane going after Smart. Smart flops twice in the same play. There's a great gif of it somewhere where just to complete. And then when the Iowa State, the Cyclone Alley did the flops.
One of the great trolls of all time.
Fantastic.
And that I remember that because Stan's Jared was a intern for us at the time. And it was Van Winkle. It was one of the two. I think it was Jared.
Yeah.
I think it was Jared.
So Smart was there 2 years.
I'm pretty sure it was Jared.
He won, which I had forgotten about because it wasn't a great year in the Big 12, but he won Player of the Year as a freshman. And then his next year, he was a sophomore. That's when he had all the hype. That's when Iowa State beat him twice.
Yeah.
Including the one at Hilton where they did the flop.
Well, whoever shot the flop, that video got great. Our video got picked up by SportsCenter that night. The Cyclone Fanatic one did.
Yep.
Which I remember who, I think it was Jared, was so excited that ESPN was going to use this video. And I don't even think there's a lot more to debate on the Marcus Smart thing.
He's the same player in the NBA.
He's a guy that everybody dislikes unless he's on your team. He's smug. There's a lot to say about
Marcus. Flops all the time.
Flops.
Yeah. He only beat Iowa State one time, though. One out of four.
I got another Oklahoma State Cowboy on my list. Do you remember Keaton Bleeping Page?
Jeez. Yes.
Now, I did a deep dive on Keaton Bleeping Page. He really wasn't that good against Iowa State.
No.
Like, we just thought that he was.
You thought he made everything, but he did shoot all the time.
Career 37% versus Iowa State.
Is that all?
That was it. He only averaged 13.3 points per game against the Cyclones. Yeah. I have all of his stats. So, he was at the beginning.
You charted everything.
That's great. I charted everything. I've been... So my wife and daughter are gone tonight. I've spent the last
like a Keaton
2 hours going. I have him and another guy coming up here, completely charted everything. Paige only played Iowa State six times because the Big 12, remember when it used to be the South?
And used to be only once a year.
Yeah. And this is his box scores. 1 of 5. This is from 3, okay?
Yeah.
1 of 5, 2 of 5, 2 of 6, 3 of 8, 5 of 8.
Okay.
2 of 9.
And he was there, what, like 2009 to 12?
Something like that,
because he gets mixed up.
With Forte.
With Forte.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little white guys who shoot
all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you just thought those two, well, they were around for 10 years, but you thought they were the same guy. And so just like, what is Keaton Page doing out there? You know, that's Forte.
The Keaton Bleeping Page game that I remember was the one where Big Silky and Freddie's first team went down there. I believe that was the 5 of 8
game. Big Silky had him beat.
Yeah.
And then
they were killing him.
Gosh, that first Fred team could have won some games.
I remember watching that game at the keg stand. Remember when we used to have our watch parties there?
We had some good times at the keg stand.
That was like pre-kids.
Yeah.
And like
responsibility already.
It was like,
really morals at all.
Honey, I'm working tonight. Okay, I've got the two Cowboys. And I've noticed the trend here. And I think it's interesting to point out there's more basketball players.
Yeah.
And I think
individuals.
My analysis of this, Brent, is just that when they're in Hilton, you're so close to them. They don't have helmets on. It's a lot easier to despise the opposition.
No question. No question. From the recent era, let me throw a couple more names from that same line of thinking. The Morris brothers.
Yeah.
From Kansas. I still don't know who's who. Marcus and Markieff. I mean, they're I think Marcus is the one that plays for the Celtics, but I mean they weren't great against Iowa State, but they were annoying.
Correct.
And then I had a long list, so I was kind of going to lump them all together and just do like mid-90s Missouri basketball. For some reason.
See, and I wasn't around during that era, so you're teaching me.
And I'll get into a little more of the details with a guy that did make my list because of Missouri basketball. But their players, I don't know if it was the color scheme, the attitude. I disliked Missouri more than any other Big 8 team. And more than anything, some of the old-timers remember this name, Jason Sutherland.
Yeah, I got B-Lass texted me about him.
He was essentially, I don't know how to describe him, but he was a kid from Watertown, South Dakota, so rural South Dakota, and just, you know, your typical whatever, grinder, scrapper.
Yeah.
But if he was on your team, great. If not, everybody despised him. He threw more balls at people. He got into it with everybody. He did not care. I read a story about him that in a game in Columbia a couple of years ago, remember the And One mixtape tour?
Like I do.
10 years ago?
That was a really big deal.
He started a brawl as an opposing player of the And One mixtape tour.
Wow.
As
that kind of guy.
Yeah, so okay. He mixed it up with everybody, and he had some monster games against Iowa State, I think. I mean, this was like early, mid-90s, but he was up there with dislikable opposing players from the old Big 8. There was a lot of them, but he stuck out more than anybody in that early 90s time frame.
He stood out to more than just you because, like, say, B-Lass is the biggest Iowa State basketball fan I know, and he popped that
and
one to me.
You know the line in Wedding Crashers? Not Wedding Crashers. Step Brothers? There's just something about your face. He was an absolute classic, one of those guys. And I'll throw – I mean, there's so many of those guys.
Can I throw some in?
Yes, please.
The Harrison twins from Colorado?
Yeah, absolutely. The famous Jared Holman
man.
Mix it up with the Harrison twins. Story.
Yeah, and Holman and Vroman versus the Harrison twins. I just wanted to see a fight.
And they almost got into it.
They damn near did.
When Jared was a freshman, Larry was still the coach, and Larry had the famous line, Jared reacted like somebody stole his cow or something.
Oh man!
But DJ and David Harrison. DJ was this kind of the score, the 3-4 type, and David was a heralded recruit that played for Ricardo Patton. Ended up making the NBA, had an okay career there, but man, they were miserable to deal with.
I credit the Harrison twins' rivalry with Holman and Vroman is what really made me an Iowa State basketball fan because we weren't very good.
Yep.
That year.
Jared's freshman year. Yeah, it would have been Jared.
No, it was Wayne's first year. Wayne's first year.
Okay, I got you.
I remember Colorado, and I was in Cyclone Alley, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't working at this time. I was just a freshman. You know, we walked over there from Friley. And I remember, you know, we were first or second row or whatever it was, and Holman about getting in a fight with one of the Harrisons. And at that point, I was like, oh, my God, I love Holman, and I hate these guys.
Yeah.
So they really fired me.
And then they had Long Sox Andy Osborne was on those Colorado teams.
Oh, I remember that guy.
6'8 guy. I was like, what are you doing?
I totally remember that guy.
That 2003 Colorado team was
for not being very good.
No, but
they were hateable.
They were very hateable. Man, and then, Ricardo, they had some teams, man. The team that beat Iowa State in 2000, I still remember that shot by Jaquay Walls. So Iowa State lost twice in conference that year. Once was to Colorado in overtime. Jaquay Walls hit like a 35-footer to send it to overtime. And the other one was another of my honorable mention guys, Eduardo Najara.
I got that one texted
played,
to me,
who
too.
Who played for Oklahoma and was just your classic 6'8", 6'9", just got in the way, was pretty productive.
Wasn't he on one of the NBA Jam games?
Yeah, he played for
like the Mavs?
He played for 10 years or so in the NBA, but it was just like
that's how I know him, is from NBA Jam.
He'd be the what fan bases, and he wasn't as good as Niang was as a college player, but that type of guy where he's like, this guy.
Yeah.
He was there forever, and he was just annoying. He got, and those Oklahoma teams, that was one of the only two games Iowa State lost in conference that year, was down on the road.
Who was their coach back in the day?
That was Kelvin Sampson.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know if he was there yet.
Yeah,
okay.
But one of my favorite stories from that game, I was listening to, because I always did, so I turned down the TV and I listened to Pete and Eric.
Yeah? Oh, yeah.
And I think the big guy for Oklahoma, it wasn't Nahar, it was the other guy. I think his name was Renzi Stone. Hits like a 20-footer, like right inside the three-point line to tie the game late in the game. And Pete goes, this is classic Pete Tedler, that big stiff hasn't hit a shot all game. Good night. And it's like, oh, man. You just, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Only Pete could get away with saying that big stiff.
All right, moving on, the Sukup Summer Series. Adam Aluska has to be on the list.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, but he wasn't.
He transferred to Iowa. My God.
So what was the trade? Adam Aluska for Alex Thompson.
Yeah, we got
right?
Alex Thompson out of the mix. I actually went through, and I have all of Aluska's stats versus Iowa State.
So, I don't remember him playing that well the first time
around. Aluska, he beat Iowa in his freshman year
at
Iowa
State. Yeah, in 02, okay.
Yep. And he scored 20 for the Hawks.
Did he?
He led the Hawks in scoring in 2004. Holman had 25 in that game. Iowa won that game 70-63. That
was in Carver.
Now, that was Bloom, the Wayne team that really struggled on the road.
Yeah, they didn't win anything on the road.
Yeah, but, you know, they were really good at home.
And that was all for – they made the tournament that year, right? That was Horner, Bruner, I think.
Was that their Northwestern State year?
Was that 04-05?
Yeah, that's that
Maybe
year.
Maybe it was next year.
It was 04-05. So, and then in 2005, and I vividly remember this night. I remember everything about this night.
And he came back to Hilton.
So I don't think that he'll even care, but I was, you know my group of friends.
Yeah.
That I hung out with.
Yeah.
Well, there was a guy with the last name Aluska who happened to be related.
Oh, poor guy.
We were at People's.
Oh, no.
You know, we all skipped class that day and went to People's. This is a
Friday night.
It was a Friday night.
I remember this game.
8 p.m.
Yep.
Friday tip.
Yep.
You won't believe the story I'm about to tell you. So,
because both teams were ranked, because Iowa State had some expectations this game, too.
And that was the same night that Glenn Worley's mom was, like, getting into it with students and stuff.
That's right.
Because the student
had, like,
section.
A couple of water thrown at
the
her.
The student section was chanting something every time Pierce touched the basketball.
Okay, yeah, because he was in that game, too. Man.
But we're at People's, and it's FAC. Iowa's in town. 8 o'clock tip. Everybody's
getting lit up.
Yes, and the whole bar is chanting "F Aluska" in unison. And you know, and I'm sitting next to the relative, who's an Iowa State student, but it was very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So then we get there. We get to the game, and Cy Ride was intense that night. Oh, let me tell you. And guess who stands next to me the whole game? Can't make it up. None other than Jeff Johnson from the Alumni Association.
In the student section?
Yes.
So he was damage control?
He decided that he wanted to sit with the students that night.
Oh, no.
This is the same night that they're chanting.
Oh, no.
I'll just say it. They are chanting. Every time Pierre Pierce touched the ball,
right.
The students were chanting rapist.
Yeah.
And here I am in, a typical shape of a college student.
Yeah,
8
Friday
o'clock
night.
Tip, rivalries in town.
Yeah.
And I've got Jeff Johnson standing next to me.
And you were aware of
it. Yeah, well, because I was working. I was starting my media career at the time.
Oh, sure, yeah. This is so fun.
But I remember that game vividly. Aluska had a really hard time because the crowd was just all over.
That was as...
Clones won 72-60.
Hostile of a game I think I've seen in when I was a student there. Now, Kansas, following the debacle and 13 was similar.
Yeah.
I mean, that place was rabid for Aluska.
That was a mean crowd.
For Iowa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where the Kansas one was more intense. Iowa
then it
game.
And then it got a little mean.
It did. No doubt.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, you're right. I think now.
The Friday night 8 o'clock tip, I don't think helped that Iowa crowd.
But there was a lot of factors. Aluska being one of them, but Pierce, and then Alford was almost made my villains list. He was dislikable.
Oh yeah,
like that.
Absolutely
not a great individual from all accounts.
So, anyways, Aluska got Iowa State his senior year. He had 18 and a 77-59 win in 2006.
You know what's interesting? Because he obviously the transfer to the in-state school is a big deal, but you know, really
classy kid though.
Good kid.
Yeah, he was.
And then his brother played for Iowa State a couple years later.
So but I think, like, but you got
to
put yourself back in it.
No, yeah, it was
in
bad.
2004.
Yeah, that was a. And again, Larry gets fired. There's a lot of uncertainty. And Adam was friends with Horner and Bruner. I mean, I think that's, if I remember the story right. So there's some logic there, but still, in-state transfer is always going to be on the list.
If you think about it now, like, in retrospect, I mean, your coach, and it was not a good time in Iowa State basketball. There's a lot of, and he clearly knew Wayne.
Sure.
You know, it's not like you bring in some new guy, like, he didn't want to play for Wayne. Boom.
And he was a highly heralded recruit. I actually played against this team in high school. I didn't get in the game.
How did that go?
I watched Adam play in high school.
I had a similar instance. I was
heck of a man. That guy was so good.
He was
really good.
It was district track, and I was the alternate for the 100 meter dash. Coach Carper ended up scrapping the A runner, put him into relay for something, like, you know, try and get it to state.
Time.
So guess who had to line up in right next to Adam Aluska in district track in the 100 meter dash?
Well, C-Duh from Clarinda.
I got owned.
He ran like a 10.
Brent, he was halfway done before I was out of the blocks.
Yeah. I think he still has a couple state.
He was incredible.
If you think of top athletes in Iowa high school history, he's up there.
I remember that same. I was long jumping. And he was a long jumper. And I, you know, like, I'm all, like, getting loose, getting ready, fired up.
Yeah.
And I remember Adam Aluska coming up. They yell his name. He hasn't even stretched. He comes up and just rips off his sweats.
Yeah.
Like, boom, 1 second, beats everybody by a foot.
Yep.
Walks off.
Crazy. But yeah, he's got to be at least in the conversation. I get it.
All right. Here's my other honorable mentions. Aaron Kraft.
Yeah.
The buzzer beater, Sweet 16.
I thought about including him in my top five. It wasn't enough of a...
We didn't know him long enough.
No. Relationship
He had the buzzer beater, 18 points in that game, 6 assists. It was March 24th, 2013.
And wasn't even a good shooter. That's what...
But he was such a punk.
He never made it in the NBA.
No.
Never did.
He actually was... Wasn't he on, like, one of those the tournament teams?
I remember I watched him, like, and he made me upset.
He's like,
Keaton Page
is the same way though, like, because he's been like a strength coach for OSU, and you like look at him, you're like, that's that it, guy. That's the guy.
Yeah, no, not a, but man, he made that, he knocked Iowa State out, and because of a couple plays earlier in the game, which leads to me to some in my top five.
I have two more honorable mentions. Okay.
Yep.
Niang's foot.
The legend of Niang's foot.
I mean, I feel like we mentioned Niang's foot on every Summer Series podcast, but it's worthy.
We need a t-shirt on
Niang's foot.
Cyclone Fanatic that says, if not for Niang's foot.
We'll be selling the Transfer U shirts here coming up. Bruce Vandeveld.
Vandeveld-y,
whatever.
Yeah, so I thought about including him. Let me do this blanket conversation with Bruce, and I'll include the administrators from the 1980s as well, because I think they go hand in hand.
Okay.
It's hard to – some of the younger folks won't know this, but in the 70s, Iowa State was the football program in the state of Iowa. Like, Iowa State won way more than Iowa did. But for whatever reason, the athletic administration did not have the commitment to football that – eventually Iowa did. So Iowa hires Hayden Fry, I think, in 1979. Iowa State had a top 20 team for a good portion of the 70s. They had Johnny Majors goes to Tennessee. Okay, they bring in Earl Bruce. Earl Bruce won a lot of games. And so let me throw this in a nod to the old-timers. A villain to be included in this conversation is Woody Hayes, the old Ohio State coach. In a bowl game against Clemson, I think, in 1978, he chokes a Clemson player running down the sideline.
He
tackles him. He, yeah, I mean, it was
okay.
It was like national news.
Like, if it would happen today.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. They had to fire him even with Woody Hayes is a legend of Ohio State. He's like an old man, got frustrated and like tackled a Clemson guy, choked him. They had to fire him. Earl Bruce is going to leave for one job. It was Ohio State. So then Iowa State is, you know, loses their coach. If they keep Earl Bruce, there's a thought that the Cyclones could have been Iowa of the 80s.
Interesting.
And not Iowa, because they lost a lot of momentum when he left. They made two really bad hires in the 80s, and Jim Kreiner and Donnie Duncan, both colossal failures. One of them got Iowa State on probation. And they just – Iowa State really lost some juice in their football program, and that led in large part to the 80s and 90s just being complete
walled in.
Yeah, it was just horrible because they did not have that commitment to athletics. And I think Bruce Vandevelde, just back to more contemporary times, has to be included in that same conversation. He inherits Iowa State at really a good time in their program, 2000. He gets hired in, I think, summer of 2000. Iowa State has Dan McCarney finally starting to figure it out.
Gene Smith, right?
Gene Smith, okay. Right?
Who's at Ohio State?
Gene Smith went from Iowa State to Arizona State and now Ohio State. So he's really moved up the ladder. But Iowa State's in a pretty good place. The basketball program is just came off an Elite Eight with Larry. You had football finally figuring out with Dan McCarney. And everything was going well. Gene had set them up in a good spot. But behind the scenes, apparently, not so great from a financial aspect. And so Bruce gets in here right away and axes men's swimming, okay, and diving
and
baseball. A lot of people never forgive him. And then not only does that happen, so he's got a lot of people against him already because you just axed baseball, even though it really wasn't a popular sport.
I was going to say, how many people were going to baseball?
Well, they weren't, but... Again, it's the act of when you
baseball.
Cut a sport, you cut a sport.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it.
And in hindsight, it may have been the right move. I mean, that's another conversation.
Well, a lot
for
of people
day.
Have followed.
Right. And it's not like Jamie Pollard is really quick to add baseball.
No.
But that happens, and then the botched Larry Eustace deal. I mean,
what do you remember about that?
I remember being pro Larry because I'm. You know, I'm 16, 17, 18 years old, and this guy just took us to Elite Eight, and now it was such a weird deal because it comes out in the register, and you're thinking, what? Like, what's going on here? You didn't quite connect the dots, and then that's when the message boards really got going. That's when I was on the Rivals board, the Rivals free board, and all this stuff would come out. I just remember thinking, this is bizarre.
Everybody's on their, like, big desktop computers.
Yeah. And it was the dial-up stuff. But it was, when it was going down, I was on the keep Larry thing. But it just was handled poorly from the get-go from a PR standpoint. And then, two, the ensuing coaching search to find Wayne Morgan was just a disaster. I mean, it was the candidates
were. Yeah, who else was?
It was Jeff Lebo. Yeah. From Chattanooga.
Yeah, I remember him.
It was
he went to New Mexico too, right?
No. You're thinking of...
Who am I thinking of?
Craig Neal, maybe.
Yeah, you're right, because he's from Iowa.
Yep. Lebo ended up going to Auburn and really didn't win there either. And then it was the guy from Fresno State who ended up being put on probation a couple years later, and the guy from Colorado State, Steve McClain. Like, it was Altman was also in there. Dana Altman turned it down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so you're left with these – when you're getting turned down by Jeff Lebo, your Iowa State, you just had Larry Eustace, like, what's going on here? And
what was the deal?
Well, it was bad timing. Nobody wanted to follow Larry. And Bruce was, I guess, just kind of a wet blanket. Like, they just – uninspiring. And, you know, he was there for 5 years, and you could argue financially probably – set up Iowa State up for better things with Jamie, but it was just not a warm personality and not a real endearing legacy left by Bruce. And the baseball thing gets a lot of the attention, but the Eustace search was really bad. The replacement search was really bad. The good news for him is he kind of left Dan alone, which I guess is good, but it was not a great 5 years after a really good couple years before then.
I think it's worth noting that a botched Vandevelde move got Iowa State a Liberty Bowl bid years later. I don't remember what Louisiana Tech's record was.
Like it was 8-3.
Yeah, it was
something.
A good record.
Yeah.
And they were invited to the Liberty Bowl
and
Vandevelde turned it down. Right. And I don't know how like public that is, but I know for a fact that's what happened.
He was looking for something better.
Yeah, he thought they'd get a better bid, and they didn't. They didn't, and it got him fired.
So,
right? Didn't he get fired there?
Yeah. Well, he's not there anymore.
Yeah, but like that was part of the reason.
Yeah.
From what I understand,
he was just not a great legacy for Bruce, and he was here for 5 years, and then but that ultimately got Iowa State Jamie Pollard.
That's it for me on my honorable mention. Do you have any more to add? I'm going to give a quick message from Suk up, and then we can get to our top fives.
Let's just go on the top fives. I'll probably think of some in the midst of it. But, I mean, some Iowa guys, there's some Iowa players from the late 90s that really bugged me. Jess Settles, J.R. Koch, Jacob Jakes. You know, really, Settles was there for 8 years. A lot of people go to college for.
Oh yeah, I had Jess Settles on my list too, but
they're called doctors.
He actually
he's worn on me since then though. Like I don't want he's great on the air.
Yeah, I love.
And I don't want to like him, but yeah, he was one of those Iowa guys, the pump fake guy.
He didn't really like beat up on Iowa State that much though.
Yeah, no, I mean they were pretty competitive series.
Yeah, they were good games.
But Jacob Jakes is one of those.
Oh, he just
grated on you.
That guy, how many technical fouls did he have that one year?
Seems awful. Yeah, and then I'll add a category called generic Kansas big dudes.
Oh, like I mean, Oster had, Tag?
Yes. Scott Pollard.
Rafe.
Who else? Eric Chenoweth.
Or as I forgot about him.
Iowa State fans used to call him, where they chant, Cheno worthless. I mean, they had a line of them. It was just like had 7-footers roll off with that stupid script Kansas on their.
You hate Heinrich and Collison?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because you knew they were supposed to be yours.
They're.
Oh, okay.
See, I thought about. Should we get into it? I've got a tie for number five.
Yeah, but I want to give a quick shout out to Suk, the largest family-owned manufacturer of grain storage, drying, and material handling equipment and steel buildings. Have you ever been to Sheffield, Iowa, Bloom?
Driven through it.
Sheffield, Iowa is the home of the Suk Up headquarters since Eugene Suk Up founded that company in 1963.
What a great Iowa company.
Iowa institution.
Oh.
Suk Up Manufacturing, the proud sponsors of the summer series.
Do you know they can fit a 757 on their grain bin?
I saw that.
That is
incredible.
That's wild.
Incredible. All right. Top five Iowa State villains here. It's the Suk Up Summer Series. I'll let you, or do you want me to go first, or do you want to? I have a feeling we're going to cross up on some things.
Yeah, go ahead.
In general, Big 12 refs. The rivalry between Iowa State fans and Big 12 referees.
Yeah.
This dates back decades, Bloom.
Oh,
decades. I mean, it's a real thing. I mean, you go back to even your youngest memories as a child, and I think we can end it right now in 2017's football season at Kansas State. Oh. There's so many theories out there. There's so much in it. You know, it's a very real thing. Hatred between Iowa State and Big 12. And I'm not going to go through call by call, but I think it's not a single person. But the rivalry is top five villains of all time are the referees for Iowa State fans.
Yeah, so I'm going to make a distinction here because the Big 12 refs in general, okay, I'm going to put them in their category, and I'm going to put
Eads?
NCAA tournament refs in another category.
Okay.
Because I think they have to be separate, sometimes the same, because sometimes the Big 12 refs do some of the NCAA tournament games, but there's particularly three that earned a special distinction that we'll get into later.
Eads is one, right?
No, not even Eads.
Oh, okay.
But three gentlemen back in Auburn Hills, Michigan, back in 2000. They get their own.
I love it that you've
they
already,
get their own you, topic.
You've deep dived and you've broken down the officials from that game. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I watched it again this weekend just to get adequately fired up about it. But
fantastic.
No, I mean, where do you go with the Big 12 ones, though? Because you can go a number of different places.
Oh, there's so many football ones just since I've been covering
just
the team.
Think of, like the Jeremiah George one.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah.
That was brutal. And that guy works multiple national championships. That's the best in the Big 12. And still missed it. Remember when
Niang charge?
Yeah, that almost induced a riot at Hilton Coliseum.
Oh, there are people like throwing things onto the floor and stuff.
Good-hearted people. But that was as bad as it got for basketball. I mean, there are missed calls, and then there's that. Like, you can argue, what's an example? The Kraft charge thing, or the Ohio State Clyburn charge thing.
Which was a bad call.
That was a bad call, too. They missed that.
Yeah,
they
reviewed it and said that they were wrong.
That was bad. But to miss the Kansas one, when there's two guys that are right there, Tom O'Neill and Bert Smith. Bert Smith still works Iowa State games, and I get upset about it. Like, those two guys, and I don't know if this is public or not, but whatever, it's 5 years ago, got suspended from the Big 12 tournament after the Iowa State-Kansas game in 13. Because of that, it was so egregious that they got suspended the rest of the season. But, I mean,
you're a ref guy. Do you think that Iowa State fans, you know, the level. Do we go too far with the
probably,
Big 12 ref thing?
Yes, but there's been so many. K-State's a great example. Like, there's no excuses for what happened down in Manhattan this year. There's none to have that many. That's really bad. And then Jamie went, remember when he had the press conference at Oklahoma State? It was a goal line situation for that. In the grand scheme of things, not horrible by Iowa State standards, but it was kind of the last straw.
Yeah, that was mild for us.
Yeah. I was like, just a review.
I actually think that Kansas State game last year was one of the worst ever.
I think it was, too.
Honestly. I think it was. I don't want to have a recency bias. I just mean, like, it was so egregious, like the picking up of all those four flags in that game.
It's one thing for judgment, but that was weird. And I don't think there's a conspiracy. I think it was just odd.
Of all the ones where you could get me on board for a conspiracy, that would be it. Because of Snyder's last game.
Yep. But
they thought maybe.
Maybe,
like,
yeah.
Normally I think it's just bad officiating. I think, like our friend Big Ben Bruns says, oftentimes the refs, which are human beings,
sure,
go in with a preconceived notion that one team is better than the other. And they don't expect the Iowa State guy to be throwing around the Oklahoma game. And that's a football example. However, if you're going to get me on board for any conspiracy theory, the Kansas State one is one that I could potentially get on board for. I don't think it is. I'm saying, like, if there was one that I would even investigate that road, that would be it.
So now that we mentioned
it. And the Texas game to Jeremiah George, that was really weird. But that was kind of a freak play, though. It wasn't a deal that.
No, I agree.
Like, that's a weird play. You don't, even as an official, you don't expect that.
The Oklahoma State game this past year, Jack Trice.
Yeah.
50-50, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you can get upset about it.
It's kind of like just saw in the NBA Finals. Like, if you, like, that play, now I'll argue that it should have never gone to a replay.
Sure.
However, if you watch the replay, I mean, you put 100 dudes in a room, it's going to be 50-50.
And the one that gets brought up all the time is the Phantom 3 at the Fog.
Yep.
With our buddy Paul Jansen as one of those three officials, where Jared Holman's involved with a lot of these things for some reason, is shooting two free throws. He misses the first. Kansas comes down, and J.R. Giddens hits a three between free throws. They count the three, which actually by rule they got this right. It was just completely botched. Iowa State gets the game to overtime, loses by a point. Should have never have gotten overtime because they allowed that three that should never have happened.
That was my number five. Do you have a number five?
Yeah.
Or do you just want me to keep going?
Keep going.
Okay.
Keep going, because I don't really have a.
Okay, I have like. Top five.
Okay, my fifth. See what I have here.
I just want to see if we cross up any.
I had Jared Haas.
I did not have him.
So,
but that's great because he struck again later on.
Yeah, so he goes. He was also included in my generic Kansas guy portfolio. But also, and Iowa State beat him. Haas was the starting shooting guard for that Iowa State team that beat them in the last Big Eight championship in 1996. So that's a good memory. But he's one of those Roy Williams disciple guys. It's just like you just kind of there, and you don't really notice him, but he's annoying. But then he comes back to bite Iowa State as the head coach of UAB in 2014. And here he is in his little glasses. He's on the sideline. Iowa State's got the blonde tips and the 11 a.m. start.
Just
and
it was a disaster.
You got the feeling right away. You're like, oh, no.
And you had all those Louisville fans. Or who was it? Louisville. Kentucky? There was all this Kentucky fans who were there.
Yeah, it was at Louisville with the Kentucky. Oh, it was just Jared Haas.
The Kentucky fans were all rooting against Iowa State because they didn't want to play Iowa State. eventually. Yep. They didn't ever want to get there.
And I watched a part of that game over the weekend. Man.
Oh, why?
Well, Iowa State had the game. They were bad all game. Cyclones are down 3 at half. Iowa State's up 4 with like 2 minutes left and then just melted down. That's
one game I will not rewatch.
You know, I
haven't yet, and I don't plan on it.
I didn't watch all of it because I've gotten through now. Maybe give me a couple years. I've gotten through Michigan State, and then I watched the full Hampton game for the first time.
Oh no!
Last on Sunday. Actually, a remarkably similar game to the UAB game, but man,
just flat.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guys. Yeah. You know, I remember sitting there on I was right behind Vern Lundquist. He called that game, right? I swear he did.
The UAB game?
Yeah. I'm almost positive.
At one point, I turned it down and tried to listen to John to change the mojo. Yeah, it didn't work.
I just remember nothing ever felt right that whole day.
Yeah, it was just awful.
The whole day. Just a really bad day.
So, number four for me, I'll just jump right in because it's similar circumstances, is the Hampton coach.
Steve Merfeld. And what's interesting about him is Greg McDermott almost hired him.
At Iowa State. Told me that, and I was like, that's not going to go over well.
So had Mac not left for Creighton, the chances are, you know, he was making all those staff changes.
Because he had hired Nick Nurse.
He had hired Nick Nurse and Jeff Greer.
Yeah, and Merfeld was going to be
another.
Like the associate, right?
Well, no, okay. No? Okay. Now that I'm talking through this in my head, I haven't talked about this in years.
That was 2010.
He ended up hiring Nick Nurse instead of Merfeld.
That's
because Otzelberger was still on staff.
But Merfeld went to work with him at Creighton.
Correct. Like, so they're very close.
Merfeld's the Hampton coach. And that indelible image that he's in the movie Dirty Dancing.
he's picked up. I believe it's on the art for this podcast.
Oh, my goodness.
Did you get Jared that art?
Yeah. No, he found it on his own. Oh, okay. Because it's the only picture of the guy as the Hampton coach. He's lifted up like he's Patrick Swayze or something. And that whole game, I mean, Iowa State's up 8, Chris, with 5 minutes left, doesn't score another point. And you know, the conversation, you hear the murmurs, right? Like, you've heard them about Jamal.
Mm.
He misses 2 wide-open layups. But I to this day, you cannot convince me that something nefarious was going on there, because why would you? I mean, the point spread was like 18 points. Like, at that point, yeah, not even.
Oh, we were way beyond that. Yeah.
So It was just, and we've learned after the fact, you've had great podcasts with Paul Shirley, that team, they were on empty and completely fractured, and nobody liked each other, and it kind of came to light there. But that wasn't even a very good Hampton team. They went on to get blitzed, I think, by Florida State. But I was so happy when UMBC beat Virginia this year, because that at least erases the 2-15 stigma from Iowa State. Now, it's happened beyond that. Duke got beat as a 2-seed.
Missouri
got beat as a
Nicholls State.
Yeah.
Lehigh was the one who beat Duke.
Well done. But that, when they lifted, that guy will always be, Steve Murphy will always be lifting up like Dirty Dancing every single NCAA tournament promo, and it drove me nuts. I watched the game. I was a junior in high school. I watched the game at a final the next day at Waukee. I said, Mom, Colin's sick. I'm not taking my final. I couldn't take it. It was worst. And the worst part for me is, I listened to that game on the radio, and then like I always did, and then turned the TV down. Well, Pete and Eric were 5 seconds ahead, so I heard them describe the end of the game when they lost. And so I'm like, sick, and then I'm doubly sick because I saw it happen live like this.
It was really
Thursday
late
night.
At night.
It was a Thursday night in Boise. It was awful. It was just completely awful. And then I did take the finals the next day, and I don't think I did very well.
I'm sure.
Oh, it was Steve Merfeld. And then the fact that McDermott almost hired him. If he gets hired, I'm sorry.
Well, it doesn't help. Mac's not popular at that time anyways. No. I mean, and then like you bring Merfeld in with the old-timers.
Big guy, Tarvis Williams, who just dominated Martin Rancic and Paul Shirley in that game. Iowa State played so bad. They did not score a basket for the final 7 minutes of that game. Freaking Hampton.
Oh man, that's good stuff.
And anytime I see Hampton, I'll turn the game off. Now I won't watch him.
You still got a beef with Hampton?
Yeah. I know it's not their fault.
Man, that's really good stuff.
Steve,
I remember that game, and I I remember being bummed out. I never hated Iowa State, even as an Iowa fan back in the day. And I remember up late because my grandparents were the ones in Iowa in our family who were Clone fans. They were them and their friends would always drive up to Iowa State games. And I remember we watched that in my living room. And I remember how sad my late grandfather was when that happened.
And it was
a bad night.
Well, it was a late night, and it was in Boise. And then the next year, Iowa State goes there for football and gets destroyed by Boise State. So, good grief. Man, this is going to be more difficult than I thought.
So, we got more. I haven't even given you my number four.
Okay.
Hayden Fry.
Okay, he was higher on my list.
I will say, I don't really think I went in order
on the
hatred here, but he 16-4 against Iowa State. Not only that, but they're legend. If you're on the other side, legendary Hayden Fry stories of like, not only do we beat these guys, but we run up the score and make an example of them because it's a recruiting tool. And we not only want to defeat our rival, but we want to humiliate them and make them irrelevant, really. And that's exactly what they did.
Completely worked. So Hayden Fry, he was number two on my list, by the way.
Okay.
I think Hayden Fry is as responsible for the demise of Iowa State football in the 80s and 90s than maybe any individual not associated with Iowa State. Okay, so the 80s and 90s, Iowa State football was so bad, and that's when I grew up. And it's like, who do I blame for this? I mean, you can blame Iowa State's administration for not having the commitment, which we talked about. I've said some poor coaches in that time. But what was the common denominator? I think the common denominator through that whole period is Hayden Fry. He gets hired in 1979. Iowa State beats him actually the first two times they play in 79 and 80. Hayden Fry's first win.
Was that under Bruce?
Well, no, actually, wait a second. No, Hayden Fry's first win as a Hawkeye coach was against Iowa State in 79. Then Iowa State beat him in 80 and 81.
Was that Bruce?
I think it would have been Bruce. Yeah.
Okay,
to go look through everything, but from 19.
Sorry, I'm asking you to recollect games you weren't even alive.
I was bored, but you go through them. But Iowa State was, like I said, in the 70s, Iowa State had one more games than Iowa did in the series. And then it completely turns 1983 is when they start their 15-game winning streak. And not only did they beat Iowa State, like you said, they made a point to embarrass Iowa State. And Jim Kreiner.
And they talked about it.
Yes.
Like it wasn't a. Like a
it
deal
wasn't
where,
a secret.
Yeah.
No, and they ran up the score.
Yeah.
Okay. Like there wasn't we're up. Now we'll just kind of be nice. No, they beat Jim Kreiner's teams, Iowa State teams, by an average of 45 points per game in the 80s.
Oh, my God.
And this is the 80s when you didn't really even throw. But
the possession was not what it was.
No,
is today.
And they made a point. And I remember the game in 1997, maybe the most embarrassed I've ever been as an Iowa State fan at a game. When I was up 35-0 at halftime at Jack Trice Stadium. They win the game 63-20, and they're throwing like flea flickers at Tim Dwight. And I'm going, what are we doing here? Completely ran up the score. Iowa State was an embarrassment at home, and you thought that Iowa was going to win the national championship of the year. That's how good they were. But Steve Loney told on your podcast last year, I don't know if you remember him saying this, the first year they were there, they lost out on every single recruit to Iowa that they recruited in state except for one. I mean, that's how much Iowa dominated Iowa State in the 80s and the 90s, and that's why if you're Iowa State, where do you go to recruit then?
Yeah.
Like Iowa had completely dismantled Iowa State's recruiting base in the state and across the Midwest, so where's Iowa State going to go to try and upend them? And they didn't. And Iowa completely embarrassed them, kept them at a level where Iowa State wasn't even an option for your top players. It was like, you're going to go to Iowa State. It was like going to, NIAC. I mean, that's what it felt like. Ben Bruns told a story that...
Not only that, but like at NIAC, you have a chance to win.
He went into the recruit... Ben Bruns went in the recruiting office at Iowa. He got offered scholarships from Iowa State and Iowa. He's one of the first to really flip and go to Iowa State. And the recruiting coordinator looked at him like, what are you doing throwing away your career over there? Like, that's what a joke. And that's what it was. It was Bill Marsaw, a lineman from... in the state, and Ben Bruns was one of the first to really flip it. And that's why when Iowa State beat him in the final game, Hayden Fry, it meant so much. It wasn't just defeating Iowa. It was actually kind of slaying a villain in Hayden Fry. And it was the last game Hayden Fry coached against Iowa State.
Now,
there was
like,
a lot more to that game than just the score.
Well, and that's why we're doing these docuseries now, and Transfer U is coming out, I think, next week, I'm hoping. and I'm going to do one on the 98 Seahawk game.
Way more to that game than meets the eye.
Correct. And I've spoken, and you're the one who introduced me to Steve Loney, and I appreciate that. And Mr. Loney has taught me a lot about just the essence of the rivalry.
Yeah. Yep.
And that, I think there's a lot of stories that can be told from that game that the general public still probably doesn't know about. And that's my goal with it.
And the other part Hayden Fry did, and I give him credit, but because Iowa was, you know, actually
the Farmers Fry, deal?
Yeah, that thing, but Hayden Fry and Kirk Ferentz have almost the exact same record for their careers right now, okay? So it's not like he was this resounding success, but they were so much better than Iowa State, they became the preeminent program in the state. And really, it's been that way ever since. Now, Iowa State has cut into that quite a bit, I would say, in the last
significantly,
15
but
years.
Still, but it's still the better program.
Probably the, you know, the flagship university, so to speak,
no
at least football-wise.
No question about that if you're being honest here.
And the Hayden Fry, again, in the 70s, it wasn't that case. And it's kind of been that way nationally. Hopefully, Iowa State with Campbell can get it back, you know, to more of an even playing field. But I think Hayden Fry is as responsible as any other person outside of Iowa State for Iowa State's lack of success in football in the last three decades.
I'm going to jump to my number one right now. And again, I didn't really label these in order of importance or anything like that, but this is the first guy that came to my mind. And you have to remember that when I came on board as an Iowa State fan, and that's Bill Snyder. He's a Hayden Fry disciple.
Well, yeah, and Hayden Fry spawned.
Yeah, yeah. So he takes over. I did a deep dive on Bill Snyder today. Takes over at Kansas State 1989. Prior to that, Brent, Iowa State was 44-24-4 lifetime versus Kansas State. Bill Snyder, in his long career, again, he took over 1989, the 3 years off. Snyder is 23-4 against Iowa State. He's currently on a 10-year winning streak against Iowa State, and he leads. Iowa State is hanging on to a 49-48-4 lead in the series. But that is total dominance over program, and this is the problem.
Yeah.
And this is a problem that I think Paul Rhodes ran into during his time at Iowa State. The Baylors are supposed to be crappy. Kansas State was supposed to suck. And when you have Baylor and Tech ranked in the top 10, or you have it's a lot more difficult now when you have Oklahoma State under Gundy compared to
where they were 15 years ago.
Where we're right there with them, right?
Yep.
And Snyder essentially turns around the worst program in college football
by far
and turns it into a national power. Well, that bad program was one that Iowa State was getting conference wins from, no longer can, and it just happens to be in the Midwest, and he's taking all the JUCOs from everywhere in a 100-mile radius. And he's a Hayden Fry disciple. So I think you add all that together, I think Bill Snyder, his dominance over Iowa State, he's got to be in the top five.
Yeah, no question.
And was he in yours?
Yeah, he was. I mean, I kind of had a combo for him. And I threw Tom Osborne in the same boat. Both just destroyed Iowa State.
See, I would make the argument, though, that Iowa State was never on Osborne and Nebraska's level.
No, but for a couple – so here's my Tom Osborne thought here. Number one –
trust me, nobody dislikes Nebraska football more than me.
He, like Hayden, not only beat Iowa State, but he embarrassed them.
Yeah.
I mean, he beat Iowa State 1 year 77-14.
Wasn't that
the
year –
and he had the starters in the fourth quarter.
That Iowa State was supposed to be decent that year too,
no,
right?
No.
Oh, okay. I remember
– 2001.
That's the game I'm thinking of, yeah. Yeah, that's the game I was thinking of.
But it
was the game in Lincoln, and like all the Iowa State fans were excited.
Yeah,
it was like 35-0.
And actually, but Tom Osborne, I have more of a philosophical problem with Tom Osborne. He ran this program, and it was, by all accounts, kind of dicey, a little messy.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
With the arrests and nowadays.
And their exploitation of the walk-ons and all that stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, you think about Lawrence Phillips for one, the Peter brothers 2 and 3. Like, there's no way Tom Osborne lasts in this era.
No question.
I mean, quickly.
And not only that, but then, like, he's revered. Right
now. I know. Yeah. They elected him to be a senator.
Yeah, he is revered.
And then he gets into the administration side, and the revenue distribution thing became a huge topic in the mid-2000s. When the Big 12 set up, Nebraska and Texas and Oklahoma said, no, we don't want equal distribution. We get more national TV games. We should get more because we're on the bigger stage. And the Iowa State of the world said, okay, fine. You know, we'll go with it. And then when Nebraska becomes mediocre in the mid-2000s,
correct.
Osborne then says, no, Texas does not deserve all this money. We deserve to be on equal playing fields. Like, Tom, you cannot have it both ways.
Yeah.
You set this up.
And then
they took their ball and ran to the Big Ten.
And I'd add to that, there's so much hypocrisy here that people don't know about. Because
it drives me nuts.
They leave the Big 12 meetings, and I don't know what year it was. I want to say 2010. It was that summer. And everybody, including Nebraska, had agreed on a new deal. And Nebraska left that meeting happy with the deal. Okay? Colorado flees without telling anybody. This is a God's honest truth, and I don't care if you haven't read it in the whatever your newspaper is. This is the truth. Colorado flees, and Nebraska, and I don't blame them, bolts to the Big Ten. It was the right move. They should have done it at that time. However, then they go off and just rip the Big 12 and all this, where they had agreed to stay.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that. That's the God's honest truth. They were going to stick around. They got spooked because Colorado left. And again, I don't blame them. They made the right move. But I would tell you to this day, there's not a single person, the Lost Dodds included, whoever the guy was at Texas, who is more responsible for Big 12 instability than Tom Osborne.
No, that's why. Exactly.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
And yet he's still, whatever. It just bothers me. So he was on my list, Tom Osborne.
He was on your top five?
Well, he and Snyder. Right, yeah, him and Snyder were kind of the same, like those old. And the thing with Snyder, I got off on an Osborne rant there. It's been the way the games have been lost.
Man, if you grew up where I grew up, Tom, I mean, there's like people have like Tom Osborne statues in their yard.
I had nightmares.
I actually spent a significant amount of time with him a couple of summers ago, and it was quite pleasant. But
well, those are the worst kind. Be nice to your face and stab you in the back.
He was a very nice gentleman.
Well, I'm sure he was.
He was using my radio show to promote his charity.
He thought Lawrence Phillips was nice, too.
Man, the stories I've heard on him behind the scenes.
But I'm saying it's like he let those guys play, and they – anyway.
Yeah, well, no, he did it today.
It worked.
Oh.
But the Bill Snyder factor, not only has he beat Iowa State, but they've all been
– this is heartbreaking.
All of them. The last
those
10 years,
Arrowhead games were. I mean, I can't
think about it. Ugh. Last year, there's been so many.
Well, the Arrowhead games. So the missed PAT.
Yeah.
And then Arnaud throws it a foot
to Alexander Robinson.
Yeah, I mean we win that one.
Game's over.
At least we beat up on Ron Prince.
The pass interference, or was it the Tyler Lockett catch?
Well, and then the
was
one
out
year.
Of bounds.
Rhodes didn't know who the hell to play at quarterback, and Knott and Klein played out of their ass. And then
the Jared Barnett.
Jared Barnett was like
thrown into the ground.
He threw like he had like a 28% completion percentage in that game.
And then there was the kneel down game.
Jeez, God,
Bill Snyder, he's gonna hang around honestly until Iowa State beats him. Like, I'm convinced at that point that is the kryptonite.
He owns
it's going
the
to
clones,
take
man.
Iowa State. Because the last time he retired, it was 2 weeks after Iowa State beat him. That's what it's going to take. Iowa State beats him this year.
Bill Snyder is 23-4.
That is unbelievable.
Against Iowa State.
That is unbelievable. So I'll go to my number.
I have two more.
Okay, I've got two more as well. Not in any particular order, but I'll just go with this one. I'll go Roy Williams.
Okay.
So Roy Williams.
Good, because that'll lead in well to my next one.
Obviously, head coach at Kansas. But yes. It wasn't just the fact that he dominated the Big 8, Big 12 for a decent portion.
Was it the Iowa recruiting thing?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And it didn't just start. It continued for years and years and years. So so Rafe LaFrance was one. Now, Rafe LaFrance, by all accounts, probably goes to Iowa, not Iowa State. But he's the guy from Monona who goes to Kansas. Like, okay, what are you doing, Rafe? Good player. Ends up really beating up on Iowa State. Now, struggled a couple times in Hilton, but Rafe LaFrance ended up the third pick in the NBA draft. Really good player. But where the story really gets interesting, and I did a little chatting with some folks this weekend about this.
Oh, we did some investigative research for the Sukup Summer Series.
Yeah, you're welcome, Sukup. Kirk Heinrich and Nick
Collison.
Yeah. Kirk Heinrich and Nick Collison are in the same class in Iowa. Kirk Heinrich is a guard out of Sioux City, I believe it was North High School, and Collison out up in Iowa Falls. Tim Floyd, as the head coach at Iowa State, receives a verbal commitment from Kirk Heinrich, who I was a seventh grader at Tim Floyd basketball camp, and I remember this guy from Sioux City who could dunk, and I was like, I've never seen somebody dunk before. It ended up being Kirk Heinrich. He commits to Iowa State as a junior. Really good guard in the state. Iowa State has a great chance to land Nick Collison, this forward out of Iowa Falls.
Of course.
He's down to a couple of schools when Floyd was there, Iowa State, Iowa, Kansas, and then some other big-timers as well. Well, as the story goes, Tim Floyd takes the Bulls job thanks to Gar Foreman. Well, Gar Foreman was an assistant for Iowa State at the time, but Jerry Krause.
Could Gar Foreman be on an honorable mention on this list?
He could potentially, because he was involved with Jerry Krause as well.
Because he stole Freddie from us.
Somewhat, yes. Yeah, he could be. He was thought what I thought about putting on there.
I didn't think of him, yeah. But I feel like that's
Little
quite
Gar.
Natural.
So he's got some connections here. So yeah. Tim Floyd takes the Bulls job and reportedly is in Las Vegas talking to Roy Williams. Roy Williams has a relationship with Michael Jordan, who Roy Williams was an assistant coach with at North Carolina. Tim wanting to keep Michael Jordan on the Bulls. Keep in mind, this is after 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Says to Roy Williams, hey, Roy, can you put in a good word with me for Michael? We'd love to keep him around in Chicago. Obviously, you know, Michael doesn't stay. But in that same conversation, Roy Williams wrote this in a book recently. Tim Floyd says to Roy, oh, and by the way, I got a couple kids in Iowa. One committed to Iowa State that I think would be good Kansas players. That being
no
Kirk
way.
Heinrich.
So Floyd basically shipped those guys off to Roy?
According to Roy Williams' book, Kirk Heinrich especially was one that he was an Iowa State commit.
We need to do a follow-up on this.
Floyd literally said, I got this guy. It's in Roy Williams' book. And that's why Kirk Heinrich ended up going to Kansas. Now Floyd leaves. Collison was a Floyd guy, didn't really care for Eustace. He ends up going to Kansas as well.
I wouldn't want to play for Larry.
But,
can you blame him?
No, but the silver lining here is Iowa State does not get Kirk Heinrich and Nick Collison, both lottery picks. However, because they didn't have a point guard, they ended up getting Jamal Tinsley.
But then Roy just took so many Iowa guys, like in his from Harrison.
Yeah, and then Harrison Barnes. Remember that ordeal?
Harrison Barnes could be honorable mention, realistically.
Changes the entire scope of a lot of things.
Yeah.
We've talked about
that. Is Fred Hoiberg ever the coach
Probably
if Harrison
not.
Barnes commits to Greg McDermott?
2009, Greg struggling, but has his one Harrison
he's probably
and his
gonna,
son.
He probably gets Doug McDermott and Harrison Barnes if Harrison Barnes Skypes somebody at Iowa State.
And Harrison invites the Iowa State band to play at Ames High School?
Yeah. And I've
there heard, is old Roy on the Skype screen.
I've got a lot of pretty good contacts from that era, and the amount of time that Harrison Barnes was like spending with Iowa State players.
Yep.
Inside that facility.
Caught everybody off guard.
Everybody was caught off guard.
And there he is on the video board at Ames High School, Roy Williams. It's almost like, ha ha ha, got you again.
So do you blame Harrison or Roy more for that?
I mean, you can't blame. Roy's
no,
doing his job. However,
Harrison, I believe, belongs to be on honorable mention.
I think so. I mean, the way
Mom
that
works at Iowa State.
And it's not like he has to pick Iowa State, but I don't know. Don't do it like that. That was a show that didn't need to be a show if you're going to do that in your hometown with the home state university.
Or home Gary town. Thompson's there.
Oh, everybody was there. The Iowa State band was there. Right? Jeez. I mean, just a bad – that was a weird deal. And then old Roy pops up with a big scowl on his face.
I will go from Roy to Bill Self.
Yep. I think it's a natural
– I mean – is there a guy who you can think of who Hilton Coliseum hates more than Bill Self?
Now, so this ties me into one of my – they were kind of in my top five, but I didn't include them.
Other than the refs.
Yeah, so that'll be my last one. The old – I think Bill Self would fit in great with this group. The old Big Eight coaches. So
– Norm Stewart.
Norm Stewart. Billy Tubbs at Oklahoma. Danny Nee at Nebraska, Roy at Kansas, Eddie Sutton at Oklahoma State. The guy at K-State was kind of forgettable. But there were some really dislikable guys in that list, but they were entertainers too. Like, you hard to get fired up about Mike Boynton at Oklahoma State these days. But I think Bill has that recognition.
He loves it.
Yeah, and he eats it up. Like, he really embraces it. Not for that, I respect him, but he's also been so good. So good. But yeah, the old Big
smug,
Eight coaches,
though.
Yeah. that I would throw in the – I learned how to cuss because of Norm Stewart. There was a guy next to me that said, F you, Norm.
The great
sit down, Norm.
Bill Self story I can tell is this year where he, you know, the students are giving him the business and he's walking out there and you can see him. He gets caught voicing to himself, I effing love this. He's grinning as he's taking the court,
yep.
And the students are just killing him.
Eating it up. Man, it's fun to beat that guy, though, when they beat him.
Yeah.
And he's been...
I like Bill Self
he's
personally.
Been good, he's been good to Fred.
He's great to Fred.
Yeah. And they have a really nice relationship, it sounds like. But man.
You know, and here's this is a good thing for Iowa State fans. I actually heard this from a really good source, an NBA source, actually. It's not Fred Hoiberg, I promise. But that Bill really did want Zion Griffin, at Kansas. So
it's good news.
Take that.
Yeah, but Bill Self.
Take that for what it is.
What he's done to the Big 12, it's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that most Iowa State fans respect Bill Self, but they equally hate him.
It's a lot like Bill
Self. He's a hateable guy if he's not yours.
He works.
Well, and the Adidas stuff,
his assistants look really slimy.
Everything
really
about
do,
it.
Yeah.
And then just the Rock Chalk Jayhawk. Yep. I mean, just being in that gym makes you dislikable.
And the way he works officials better than anybody in the game.
Did
right
you
now.
Hear Him Van Gundy's Izzo. Analysis of working officials the
exactly.
other night?
Does it to a T.
Yeah. And that's Bill Self to a T. Yeah.
So Bill Self.
That's Bill Self versus Hoiberg or Prom.
Because the theory is if I'm going to work you all game, I'm not going to do enough then to get a T.
Correct.
But if I have an outburst, but I'm calling the rest of the game, but that outburst looks worse.
Like Ty Lue did on Sunday night.
Yeah, but Bill Self is really a master when it comes to working officials and good at what he does.
Let me give my last one, because I think your last one's going to be a bigger deal. I did put Gene Chizik on the list. Because I'm thinking more modern times.
Okay.
And I think that you have to get past the 5-19 record. I want to even get past the way that he left and when he left and how he left and all that stuff. Although I do know people who were on that team, and it would make you cringe to know how he treated the players that he had recruited to Iowa State on that team.
Yeah.
He walks in, gives them like a 2-minute speech, leaves, gets on a plane. That was it. That's how he left. There was nothing personal about it. It was awful. According to what I've been told, I guess. Yeah, I don't know that for a fact. But I know multiple players who were on that team.
Sure.
It was not a
good deal.
It was not a graceful
exit,
according to what they have told me. But he was never a good fit. I've told this story before, but you know, like when Mac would have like a mandatory meeting between the media and him, where he wanted to get to know you,
yep.
And he wanted it to be a personal relationship and a know how your wife was doing and like whatever, which is like whatever. I'm not saying that even has to be the case, but I remember, you know, I hadn't met Coach Chizik and I was trying to cover his team and I was like, can I speak to this guy? And it was more of a minute and a half, like get the hell out of my office type feeling. And I guess the greater point I'm making, and fans don't care how coaches treat the media. That's not what I'm trying to make it. But there's a general way that Iowa State fans just do things and react to things. And Chizik, just there was never that feeling.
Right.
I think that's why he's remembered as so poorly, more so than the 5-19 record. Because he did recruit well. I'll give him credit for that.
Yeah, and
Paul Rhodes set up a lot of success because of Gene Chizik's recruiting. And I give him credit for that. But I do think that if you would poll, if we had 1,000 Iowa State fans here, it would be an overwhelming, I mean, in the 90s, as to people disliking that guy, and it had more to do with that than it did his record at Iowa State.
And he didn't, you know, I think people that knew Gene, got to know him, liked him. But
really? Because I never really got
I mean,
I never felt that.
Well, I think, maybe not. I don't know. I think people, at least that worked
people
with him
in
every
the program,
day.
Yeah, okay.
In the program. Not just outsiders, but he was. The presentation wasn't always great, and I think everybody knew he had an eye on something else. And just like anything you do in life, if you are not totally engaged with what you're doing, totally committed to what you're doing, I think people pick up on that. And there was a lack of genuineness to him in Ames, whether it's because he always wanted to get back down to where he's more comfortable, clearly,
yeah,
in the South or whatever it was, or he realized when he got here this was a bigger animal than he thought. He thought he could just come here, win for a couple years, and leave, and he got, and it's a huge challenge, but it just never fit.
For what it's
never
worth,
fit together.
He and Jamie Pollard are still friends.
Yeah, that's something like, I think...
Like, there's, Jamie went down and, like, saw him recently. He was, like, posting pictures of him on Twitter.
And like, guys like John and Eric, they had a good working relationship with Gene, and those who finally were able to know him a little bit, he was okay to deal with, but he just never gave that... Even his press conference, he always felt like he was hard to, you know, grasp. He was just kind of always on his own.
And I'll say this, just... He was a terrible head coach when he was at Iowa State.
Yeah, he was completely learning on the job.
I mean, the decision-making end game, like, it was awful.
And then it just started out poorly because he hired all of his buddies, and you kind of went, oh, no, what are we doing here?
You didn't even have him as honorable mention.
No, I did.
Were you surprised that I brought him up?
No, I'm not, because I think it was such a blip on the radar in a way, because he was 2 years and out.
Yeah.
And it was just... kind of happened is you forget about it. It wasn't a fun 2 years at all.
I don't think that the Cam Newton situation
that's
helped.
He
gets off that plane, does the War Eagle thing that was super awkward, and then Cam Newton is such a firestorm of controversy at Auburn, and Chizik's in the middle of it. So not only as an Iowa State fan did we lose our guy, well, now he's, you know, in this big controversy, and we have to see it on TV constantly. It was really a bad scenario
An
Iowa State fan watching that.
You know, I think...
Although I think Iowa State benefited from him leaving,
well,
to be
I was just going
to
get...
You.
I think in a,
I don't in think a, it ever would have worked.
In a strange way, Gene Chizik was necessary to get a Paul Rhodes type who was really beloved for a while. We talked about that last year.
I don't care. Paul Rhodes did a good job at Iowa State.
He did.
I believe that to this day.
That also, I mean, Gene Chizik is really, I mean, McDermott was Pollard's first big hire and then Chizik's right. But Chizik was the big one for Jamie. And I think it taught, maybe, you know, we'd have to ask Jamie about this, but I think he learned some lessons along the way of what fit is really about names. And I think
You've
got two really good guys at the three, if you include Bill, but we'll always include Bill, at the major levels. And it's because of mistakes that were made in hiring before. So I think it all works that way. So
yeah, I think it worked out for the better. However, the vibe there is why I would put him on my list.
And I bet if Gene came here 10 years later, so if he came now, okay, and I know he's kind of out of coaching now, right?
Yeah.
He'd be different. I mean,
you know,
I
who he's a guy who Bloom reminds me of LeBron in the sense that, like, everybody hated him 10 years ago. I actually think he's a decent guy now.
And I think that's what – I think he probably thought he was – I mean, he was assistant coach of the year. I'm big stuff. I'm coming in here. It's going to be my way or the highway.
Yep.
These yokels, you know, whatever, I'll deal with them. I'm going to get my guys. We're going to win. I'm going to leave. And he never really had the time to really ingratiate himself, and I think people felt that. And the one thing about Iowa State fans, more than anything, wins or losses, anything, they want to feel like you're one of them.
Yes.
And I think that is maybe the biggest character trait of any coach or player or whatever, is Iowa State fans want to be able to grab onto you as you're one of our own. And I think that's why guys like Naz, George, Monte, Matt were really hit it off with Iowa State fans, is because – they were here long enough that eventually they felt like you were part of our family.
Absolutely.
Gene always felt like he was some, you know, stepdad coming in for whatever, and we didn't really like him. So, but I agree. I think he belongs in the conversation for sure. I'm going to read you an article.
Okay.
Dated March 26, 2000.
Okay.
And the headline is, "Small-time refs take heart out of big-time game." Dateline, Auburn Hills, Michigan. The author... Skip Bayless.
Wow.
Okay, you ready?
Wow. I never expected to hear that.
Chicago Tribune. This is Chicago Tribune Archives.
Okay.
"What turned into an extraordinary college basketball game was not stolen from Iowa State. Michigan State deserved to win." Okay, that part we might disagree with. "Michigan State belongs in the Final Four. Saturday night's three-man officiating crew belongs on probation. These nitwits did a two-hour infomercial on why student-athletes should turn pro as soon as possible. The refs turned a furiously played game between terrific young athletes into tedious, trivial pursuit. They became impossibly picky freshman English teachers, overzealous lifeguards on opening day at the neighborhood pool, strictly amateurs. The biggest whistle should be blown on refs Curtis Shaw, Frank Bisogni, and Lonnie Dixon.
Isn't Curtis Shaw the director of officiating
in the Big 12? Coordinator of officials.
So it all comes full circle.
Exactly.
Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yep, nope. The biggest whistle should be blown on refs Curtis Shaw, Frank Bisogni, and Lonnie Dixon for doing everything in their considerable power to ruin what might have been the national championship game. The kids on the court didn't choke in the stifling tension. The adults did. It's a Skip Bayless column from the Iowa State-Michigan State game in 2000. Iowa State has a 7-point lead with 5 minutes to go. Iowa State gets called for a 3-second violation, loses a possession. Next possession, Marcus Fizer gets called for a very debatable moving screen, loses a possession. Meanwhile, Michigan State's starting to chip away. It's a 2-point game. There's a block, charge, debate. Paul Shirley catches the ball. Charlie Bell slides underneath, pretty easily a block call. Underneath official Frank Bisogni calls a charge. Lonnie Dixon has a block. We go to the monitor, the old blarge, double foul. Ends up being Iowa State possession, but not an and one that could have given Iowa State separation. He eventually surely fouls out because of that.
How many times have you watched it?
Probably three. One of them was this weekend.
All right. So you've stayed away from it.
Yes, I have for the most part. But it reminded me of when you watched the movie Titanic, right?
Oh, no.
So you know what the eventual outcome is.
Yeah.
But yet you're like, oh, no. This is happening. Like in the
but there's no naked woman.
No, there's no Kate Winslet involved. And you can see it sequencing after sequence. I don't know to this day if Iowa State got jobbed or not. If it was an inside job, yada yada yada. The fact that they are playing for one in Auburn Hills.
The seating committee did a terrible job.
And I've heard some rumbling that perhaps Iowa State had a shot at the one seed. And again, I don't know. Again, this is like fourth hand, had a shot at a one seed, but preferred being a two seed in Minneapolis where they could travel to, as opposed to a one seed elsewhere. Regardless, they had to play Michigan State in Auburn Hills, which is about an hour from Lansing, and the court was green, Chris. The court at this game was green.
Yeah, it was bad.
And Iowa State still had out-rebounded Michigan State by 14. They had the game won, and then weird stuff started to happen the final 5 minutes, culminating in that blarge call that eventually fouled out Paul Shirley. The Cyclones were clearly rattled. You could see Larry Eustachy. When that happens, it's like when you hit the iceberg.
Yeah.
And then everything started
iceberg hit.
Yeah. Everything started to unravel since then. And then it just completely the ship sank on a debatable Michael Nurse foul call under him and left it. And Iowa State just unraveled after that.
So I've never actually like been able to ask you about this. We've never really talked about it. Like the Blooms are officials.
Yes.
Are you guys able to be objective about this game?
I try to be, and that's why I wanted to rewatch it, because when I watched it when I was...
I'm more in a...
Yeah.
Like, can you watch it as a ref?
Yeah, you can. And in that case, it's not exactly the same as an Iowa State fan, but there is a sequence of things that mm-hmm. happened where it all went against Iowa State, where you go...
Yeah, what the crap?
What's going on here?
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was Izzo. So Izzo, when Iowa State's up five, Izzo gets teed with 5:40 left. And you thought that was going to be, oh, now Izzo's losing his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now Michigan State's unraveling. Well, from then on, Izzo gets that tee, and it got really one-sided the rest of the way.
So you think the Izzo tee was strategic?
I think it absolutely was.
Yeah.
And everything went Michigan State's way.
What's your dad think about that game?
I've never really asked him, but I would assume
we need to get him on the podcast.
He's in the same boat, but it was just, it was a weird deal. So, and this is the final line from Skip Bayless's column.
Okay.
Finally, Iowa State's Paul Shirley bumped into MSU's Charlie Bell. Shirley scored in the lane with 2 minutes left. It should have been a let-him-play no-call, which I agree with. Gave him the Cyclones a 3-point lead. Disagreeing refs finally gave each other each player a foul. Huh? Question mark. But the Spartans would have found a way. They're a little better than Iowa State and a lot better than Saturday night's officiating, which I don't necessarily agree with. But it's interesting how Skip Bayless from the Chicago Tribune saw it as well.
It's just crazy
that it's Skip Bayless, right?
Yeah, Skip Bayless, who
18 years ago,
and I would guess the majority of the listeners cringe when you hear that name.
Yeah, But I think everybody impartially saw that game, and this is why they're the villains they are, saw that game as a national championship game. Michigan State ends up beating an 8-seed in Wisconsin, a 5-seed in Florida in the championship to win it all. If Iowa State doesn't have those three officials, let's say it goes a little bit different. They have a 7-point lead, and they milk the clock, and they win the game. How much does a national championship in Ames change the dynamic and the future for all of us?
I feel like that's a pretty good way to end this thing.
That's why Curtis Shaw, the Big 12 coordinator officials, which is hilarious too,
How did I never know
He's
that?
The one that ejected Eustachy. Now, he was not involved with a lot of the calls.
He's the guy who gives the thing in Dallas every year.
Yep.
I was watching him, and he's like, quit, though, right?
He doesn't officiate anymore. He just coordinates.
No, but he's not. This is like his last year.
I think
year.
He's done with that, too, yeah. But, yeah, Curtis Shaw.
Because I put out a snarky tweet about that, but I didn't even realize it was the same guy.
Frank Bozzoni, Lonnie Dixon. Those three will go down in Iowa State history.
Well, now it all makes sense, though. All the screw jobs over the years because of Curtis Shaw.
It all ties back to Curtis Shaw.
Man. Well, that was an interesting start to the summer series. So we've got some plans. We don't have all the topics picked out. We are going to, for one of these, invite our friend Eric Heft.
Yes.
On and just let Heft tell stories.
It'll blow us out of the water.
Yeah. So we're going to do that. If you guys have good topics, send them to us. We have a great worksheet that we've started on potential topics from a lot of your recommendations. I always ask you guys, if you enjoy what we're doing, to go on to iTunes and rate us. That helps our ratings and all that stuff. And you can always donate to our Patreon page as well. Helps keep content like this free. We want to give a shout out to our friends at Sukup Manufacturing. We're going to be Emily's going to join us on one of these and talk Cyclones with us, I know. So we're looking forward to that as well. Thanks for your time tonight, Bloom.
It was fun.
Was it?
No. Well, kind of. It's good to cathartic.
That was one of the more painful summer series.
Cathartic. It was good. It's good to relive some of that.
Yeah.
I never have to see some of those things again, it'd be
all
okay.
Of a sudden, like after the referee topic that you just went through, like Keaton Page seems pretty mild,
right?
You know,
until next time, yeah.
Keaton Page and Jess Settle seem pretty tame. When you start talking about Bill Snyder and Hayden Fry, compare them up to those guys.
Tom Osborne, go away.
All right, guys, have a great rest of your week. We appreciate you listening. So long.